Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site and fm1032.com.au.
Well, brand names, product lines, share prices and profit statements, our next guest knows all about them, but has been able to add the phrase good deeds to the list as well. Peter Irvine is the co-founder of Gloria Jean's Coffee, and we thought it'd be worthwhile chatting to him about the role of faith in the business world. Peter, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Sheridan.
It's good to have you here. It's been quite a career that you've had too. And just looking at the Gloria Jean statistics, two Sydney shops in 1996 becomes 400-something shops 10 years later right across the nation. Did you ever see it would basically run off that quickly?
No, look, when my partner Navi Sali and I went to the US in mid-95 to look at Gloria Jean's, because he was offered the opportunity, we negotiated the rights for 25 stores for the first 10 years, which would have finished last year, 2006. And our vision, and you never know where your vision takes you, where God's, you know, got a plan and a purpose for you. Mm. But our vision was to be the most respected and loved coffee company in Australia. And on the basis of that, we thought 25 stores probably would do it, in naivety. Mm-hmm. But today, which is the 11th year this year, as of November, we would have opened 11 years ago, there are now 423 stores right around Australia. And just over 2 years ago, we bought the rights to own the brand worldwide.
Because it wasn't actually doing all that well in the US when you bought it, was it?
Well, we didn't know that at the time we were there. They had something like 270 stores, and they now have about 150. So you can see they were growing in the wrong direction. Mm. The model wasn't quite right. And they didn't develop it. They didn't grow it. They had no vision. And hence, they just drifted around. And the time before we purchased it, they had three owners.
That's quite telling then. Obviously, yes, they were trying to offload it from one person to another. If you could bring it down then to three core things that has made the Gloria Jean's brand successful, what would you bring it down to?
Well, I believe God put our partnership together and he called it into being, birthed the idea. Secondly is having a vision and having a big vision, which for us back then was big. Today mm-hmm. it's even bigger.
Yes.
And thirdly, being a franchise system, having owner operators on the ground. I mean, it brings its own issues, but in the end, they are the owner, they've got skin in the game, and when they're trained correctly, they can make it happen.
Mm, okay, well, that whole issue of franchising is quite interesting, because that itself is a growth industry, isn't it?
Sure is.
Now, why is that? What does that say about our culture when franchising is kind of taking off so much?
Well, franchising many years ago did not have a good name, and when the government about 7 years ago brought in the franchising code, and in the end, we don't like a lot of government intervention, but that was a fantastic thing they did because it brought credibility and accountability to the franchising industry. It was that day that accelerated franchising as an accepted area. It took time to grow, but it gave us that start. And from there, people today can now own a business. You know, they get disenchanted with big business because, you know, there's no face to the company, or they get retrenched, or they suddenly lose their job or get taken over. So today they can own a business of an industry or product or service they like. And it's their business and they can pass it on, or many of them build their business and sell it. And, you know, there are issues with people owning businesses mm. if they're not used to it. But in the end, it's been successful and very successful for people to prosper through that.
You mentioned before that one of the reasons you think the brand has been so successful is because God has actually been at the centre of it and actually brought you and your business partner together to really be the, I guess, the fuel behind what was then a struggling overseas brand, making it a very successful Australian brand and then taking that back overseas. When it comes to being a Christian person in business, how have you sought to integrate your faith into the business of Gloria Jean's?
Well, see, I don't believe there's a conflict, or I don't believe it's an issue, because when you have a relationship with Jesus, it impacts your thinking. See, one of the problems in life, people think God's first, family second, business is third. And in fact, the founder of McDonald's, Ray Kroc, and he was in his 50s when he founded it, so it gives us all hope, or maybe everyone else except me, because I passed that. But he said, I believe in God, the family, and McDonald's, but at work, the order is reversed. And I don't believe that's correct. Number one, we should be the same at home, in our church, in our business. We should be the same person. Secondly, I don't believe God wants to be first, something second, something third. He wants to be part of the whole lot. If you set a priority, then there's conflict. You're fighting with family versus your church involvement, your relationship with God, you're fighting with business. And there are a number of business people who like being involved in church and profess to be Christians and could be, but they do one thing on Sunday, they give God 2 hours and do what they like during the week. Mm. And that's not the lifestyle that he wants us to live. And when you accept and listen and spend time with him, then there are his directions come for business, for your relationships at home, for your relationships at work, and with your supplier partners.
We're talking to Peter Irvine, the co-founder of Gloria Jean's Coffee. Peter, the people that I know who are Christians in business, there are three areas that come to mind that they struggle with a little bit. One is underperforming employees and how merciful or how graceful to be to them. Bad debts and how merciful or graceful to actually be to those bad debtors towards them. And thirdly, how ruthless to be in competition with other people. How have you worked out answers to those kinds of things?
Well, there's quite a range of subjects there, but if we take the people aspect, you know, Jim Collins in his book Good to Great, What Took Good Companies to Great Company, in one of the chapters he talks about the bus. And, you know, you and your employees are on the bus and sometimes the bus has to stop and people have to get off and new people get on. And I've found, and I've seen it in churches, in business, there are times when people need to leave. We always think they're there forever, but people start to develop comfort zones, they develop mindsets, they become antagonistic, they're small thinkers, and they actually stall a business or a church. And sometimes they need to move on and go somewhere else where they then start to flourish again. And new people come in, bring some new thinking, some new stretching. You know, everyone says, well, you know, what's biblical about that? If you look about when God moved kings and other people on when they wouldn't do what he told them to do, so he was not frightened, neither should he be, in moving people on. And I've found that people start to flourish. The CEO of the Ritz-Carlton hotel chain says he staggered by age 27 how many people have effectively retired. They hate their work. They have no passion for what they do. And he said all they're there is to get by and pay bills. And that's a terrible existence. We should be living and breathing our work and loving it. We need to balance that with our relationships and family and so on. But it needs to be part of our life. And whether I've ever owned a business when I worked in, didn't own it in advertising till owning Gloria Jean's, I treated it as the same. I had a passion and a commitment about everything I did.
And what about the competition side of things, though? Can you be too ruthless to the point where competition actually becomes destruction for other people's businesses?
The way I see it with business is we're meant to succeed and grow. God wants our businesses to grow so we can be a blessing to other people. And that's providing jobs. You know, it can be growing the market and then it can be contributing money or product to charities and missions and schools and those in need. And I view my business, we need to be leaders. Then everyone follows. When we started with Gloria Jean's in Australia, the coffee industries were stagnant and the coffee industry criticised that we never work. And today, their businesses are phenomenal. The growth of coffee and tea in this country is phenomenal. So they've actually benefited from it. Hmm. 2 years ago, I had a call from the Financial Review, a journalist who said to me, the problem with you guys is when you open a store, you put the other cafes out of business. Now, that's a little bit of a hearsay. So I said to the journalist, well, can you name one cafe has gone out of business? And they said, no, we can't. And I said, well, that's the problem. They're just rumours and mindsets out there. What we've actually done is grown the market for everyone. We didn't intentionally set out to do that. But God had us on a journey, and from our business, we're able to set examples to other businesses how to treat staff. We're able to give from our business to those in need and ministries. That sets an example because I share that with businesses and they go, hey, we'd like to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I start sharing things like how many children we sponsor with Compassion or how much is raised through Mercy Ministries or Opportunities International or whatever it is, they all go, oh, wow, there's a lot of different ideas. I thought it was just giving money away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, actually, that's another key point too, isn't it? Is that you have used that particular brand to support so many charities and so many good works, I guess, around the nation.
Yeah, and that's why we started the business. Is to actually have a business that was able to give.
Initial motivation. Right.
Was our first problem because the first 3.5-4 years we were losing a lot of money and we had to draw a line in the sand and say, you know, as of this month, we're going to give $500 to X and just start the process. Now, that doesn't mean our cash flow issues and our problems have gone away, because God never promises we're not going to face issues or problems. Mm. He promises a way through.
Have you actually been overseas to see some of the work of Compassion or some of the other charities you actually
support? No, I personally haven't, but my partner, he and his wife went last year to visit the 200 children we're sponsoring in a village in Brazil, and in fact, organised to have a birthday party for them and take a soccer ball for all the boys and a doll for all the girls, because I'll never ever get to own one of these. And they were able to come back with photos and share with our staff, who took on another 50-plus children. Right. And then we presented it to our master franchisees around the world, and they took on another 50-plus children. So there's now over 300 children in a village in Brazil. So you can see the roll-on effect.
I remember, because I've been overseas with Compassion actually a number of times, and I think it was particularly in Bangladesh when just seeing the incredible poverty, but then recognising the exchange rate, you know, that one Australian dollar could actually buy 45 Bangladeshi taka, and seeing that, you know, to actually put a child through school, even at a local school, rather than even the Compassion school, would cost the equivalent of 50 Australian dollars for 1 year. I remember coming back and thinking, if I wasn't called to do what I am called to do, and I know that I'm called to do what the things that I'm doing at the moment, I would want to be in business. I'd actually want to be earning as much as I can and shoveling it over into the developing world because of those kinds of things, the great work that can be done.
Yeah. And that's what I do when I talk to Christian business or and non-Christian business people, is I challenge them that they're here more than just getting by and paying bills. And I just say, I don't believe God wants our relationships to fail, our churches to fail, or our businesses to fail. He wants them to grow so that we can be a blessing to other people. It's not a problem living in the benefits of it. The problem is if we do nothing with that money. Look, we can't do everything, and we get approached, you know, many great causes, many opportunity. We cannot do everything, so we sit down once a year and make a faith commitment for the next 12 months. And, you know, we support those organisation, ministries and charities. And as I said, we can't do everything, but we have to do something.
Do something, yeah. Well, we're talking to Peter Irvine on Open House tonight. So you would have been a Christian then in the advertising industry.
Most definitely.
Because you had a number of years at DDB Needham, which is actually a very high-profile advertising agency.
Yeah, 30 years,
and
just
over. And you were leading it for a few years as well as managing director. Advertising and Christian values, how'd you go there? Because sometimes, you know, there's a lot of tension there between what advertising uses and its tools and techniques.
Well, yes, I mean, I met over the years many Christians who worked in various aspects of advertising, and since I've met more who were around during my time I never got to meet at that time. And I saw that, you know, there are people in every aspect of business that need to know Jesus, come into a relationship with him. And through the way I dealt with people, the media, with our staff, people saw a different reaction, and people would come up and ask, why are you different? There are often people said, you know, I've got problems in family, you know, how do I deal with that? And there were times I was able to nail things that were inappropriate and not allow them to happen. Mm-hmm. There are other times early in my working life I didn't have that influence, and I didn't know it until it actually appeared. But along the way, as you get more influence, as you grow, then you can have a say on what happens and what doesn't. And, you know, generally most clients want to have, if you like, a clean image. They want to have advertising that works. And, you know, business and advertising and marketing is a part of life. I mean, in the end, churches are promoting themselves through programs.
Yeah, even if it's just a Sunday bulletin, that's right.
That's right. Everything we do, word of mouth, people talking, is marketing and advertising, and it can be used for good or it can be used for evil.
Was there ever a time, though, you had to pull an ad? You actually felt, hang on a sec, this, maybe it was using sex to sell or something like that, and you thought, hang on a sec, I don't think this is the right path? No. Or did you ever feel very uncomfortable about some of the ads that you produced?
No, fortunately, in most cases, I was able to get them pulled before they ever got produced. And our agency tended to stay away from the too risque stuff. You see, even today, you see commercials that uses sex, if you like, or inappropriate things to promote a product. And it's just because that's the mindset of the people who write those ads. It has nothing to do with the product they're selling. It actually is cross purposes with what they're selling. Mm. And you just know they just wanted to get sex in there or something. They wanted to attract attention. I don't think people notice the product. They actually just notice the other thing. So I think it's counterproductive.
Mm. All right. Well, you've started off in advertising, you moved into franchising, and now you're moving into welfare, although you probably haven't really let go of some of those other hats. Tell us about your new role with Mercy Ministries.
Well, back in January this year, I said to my partner, we put on some senior people to run the Glory Jeans around the world and Australia. I said, it was time that we step back. Well, I said, this is the year for me. So in about March or April, I stepped back from the day-to-day. So I'm still shareholder and still on the board. And they asked me to continue to do all the speaking engagement to business groups and so on, which I've continued to do, and it accelerated. I was then asked to put a book out based on my lessons from business, which I've done, and it's out in 2 weeks approximately, called Win in Business. And then people approached me to consult on franchising, how to get in franchising. So I had this really busy life. And then about June, my wife and I were approached to take on the running of Mercy Ministries in Australia. And we obviously didn't duck fast enough. But I said, well, I need a real revelation from God, and we did get it. But in January, you know, when we'd made this decision, I was going to step back because I knew I could be busy with other things. You get nervous and you think, well, you think God wants you to do that, but what am I going to do? And I was just going on holidays and I was having my quiet time, and I sensed God say to me, look, unless you step back, I can't take you to where I want you to go. And I said, well, it'd be good if you told me because it would help me make the decision. And it was like, no, you're not getting that. You've really got to take that step first. So it's for business people and people in life, it's actually God's birthing things in them. They're nervous. It gets them out of their comfort zone. They're listening too much to family and friends about, oh, that'll never work. When we've got to step out, because he can direct something that's moving. When you're standing still, like on a bike, you don't move, you fall off.
Right.
But you can direct something. As long as you've got ears, you're listening. You don't go and become sit in a closet and not be listening to what he's saying.
So executive director of Mercy Ministries.
Yeah, executive director.
Okay, as well as the other role. So,
yeah, yes. Whatever executive director means, but it means Sue and I are in charge.
And we should mention too, Mercy Ministries, the actual work is actually with girls who find themselves, for whatever reason, in all sorts of different life and difficult life circumstances.
Yeah, it's 16 to 28 years old. And it's for young women in crisis, those who've got eating disorders, have been abused, substance abuse, suicide tendencies, unplanned pregnancy. And they come into a residential program. There's two homes, one in Sydney, one on the Sunshine Coast. And hopefully within a couple of years, there'll be three or four more homes because the need is just great. And they come into this program, and at the end of it, it affects their whole life, you know, dietary, appearance, health and spiritual side, and they come out just totally with a new future, new hope. It's just fantastic to see their testimonies.
Okay, so you're looking forward to the new role. You've got a certain sense of passion about it, even though
we've always had a passion stretched. Supporting Mercy, and particularly with Gloria Jeans, having the money boxes and the cappuccino for a cause. But this is now real hands-on.
Yeah. Well, Peter Irvine, been good to talk to you. Now we need to finish off with a bit of advice for those budding entrepreneurs that are listening to us. I'm actually saying, okay, well, I want to know how to get my thing off the ground. If you were to give three bits of advice to a budding entrepreneur, what would you give them?
Firstly, have a vision, have a large vision. Then you've got to develop your action plans to work towards that vision. Michelangelo said the greatest danger for us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but it's too low and we achieve it. And secondly, don't live in other people's mindsets. People will always tell you what you can't do. When you decide to do something, 10% of people will oppose you or disagree with you. You cannot build a business, a relationship on that 10% of people. And thirdly, get rid of the rear vision mentality. The rear vision is small and distorts what's back there. We always like to go back to the good old days, but the windscreen is wide. That's everything that's out there before us. And yes, there's risks in moving forwards, but there's risks in standing still. And we spend so much time looking back that we'll get run over. In business, we get run over because we're not looking where we're going. The children of Israel wanted to go back to slavery and oppression in Egypt rather than to the promised land that God wanted to take them into, a better, prosperous place.
Yeah, because they knew it and it was comfortable.
That's right.
Absolutely. When you scan the environment, when you scan the business environment, are there any areas where you go as an entrepreneur, you look in and say, that's just waiting to be capitalized on?
No, probably not today, because my mind's running from speaking engagements to finishing a book to Mercy Ministries to consulting with people. But I'm just amazed at ideas people have in them. And when they talk about them, you go, what a great idea, but they're just scared to do anything about it. They've got that passion and they're just worried, will I be successful? Will anyone accept me? All those things that come up that we all have. They're not on their own. We all have them. But God's birthed them, and he wants us to move forward with them.
And that's probably a good place to end with that thought. Peter Irvine, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sheridan.
That's Peter Irvine, the co-founder of Gloria Jean's Coffees and now Executive Director of Mercy Ministries.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.